He raped her, strangled her to death.
We've got nothing.
The killer found a way to get Carla Castillo into his car, and he drove her to Churchville. That is not random.
It might be.
You may never know, and you may have to live with that.
There's no time.
O'clock.
And it's episode 97.
97.
Counting down to that big old 100th episode. Yeah, maybe I shouldn't hype it up too much, but I think it's going to be awesome, though.
Yeah, we did a lot of material for it last night. We had Shauna Battle Glitter over, and her husband Eric was over, and we had a lot of fun. And we realized that
much alcohol was consumed.
Yeah, and I discussed, like, my recent breakup with Krussel, and
it's very sad, it's very, you guys. Sad.
You guys are going to love it.
Yeah, we did actually record a lot of material last night for it. I still have to edit it and everything like that, because the 100th episode is actually going to be out on July 17th.
Yeah.
So I wanted to make sure that I had a lot of material for it ahead of time, so I had time to, like, put it all together and make it as cool as I could make it.
Yeah, it's going to be a kind of a variety show. We do a bunch of cases, and we were going to do, like, 10 lists of
10 things, yeah,
to make 100 things 100. To talk about. We realized that, man,
we did two lists, and the show is, like, 3 hours
long.
Yeah.
Shit, man.
Because we just went on and on.
This is going to be a 25-hour show.
We should just kind of knock it off with this.
We're just going to leave it with the miserable 20, and then give you some extra bonus stuff. I kind of got lazy from all that, you know, alcohol I was drinking. I let Shauna Battle Glitter take over the show for me, so she sat in for a while. You guys are going to love it, though, because she's
like
a hilarious guest.
Making funny comments on my horrifying true crime cases. Yeah.
She's a hilarious
she's
guest.
Very funny. Yeah. I love those too. Yeah, it was super fun. But yeah, that's what we spent all night doing last night. That was Saturday night.
We're still trying to recover from it.
Yeah, like I said, we drank a great deal. But
it was like a nightclub.
Well, I drank a lot, but it was over like a 12-hour period.
Right, because we worked a long time.
Yeah, so it wasn't like, and we ate and stuff, and you know.
I had to cook Indian food. I cooked that butter.
He makes the best Indian food. Have we ever talked about that before?
No,
like how good a cook you are?
No, they don't know about it.
You know, he can make anything pretty much.
I have professional training, so I know what I'm doing.
But really, your Indian food and your Thai food
pretty good
are my favorite.
I know.
Your Hungarian paprikash.
Yeah, thank you.
That is also delicious.
I just pulled a Thai dish, you know, just out of nowhere. I inherited a damn papaya.
A big, huge papaya, yeah.
Yeah, and I had to use it in something, so I decided to make it a Thai chicken papaya curry.
Which we never made before.
Never made it before. It was really good.
It did turn out very good.
Really good,
We still have a little bit left over, I might guess.
Yeah.
So it is Sunday evening, and we're recording episode 97, which is going to be another true crime show. Today, we are drinking something a little unusual.
Well, we sound like alkies now.
We do.
Talking about drinking. Hair of the dog. It's Sunday.
Yeah. It was hours and hours ago that
it was hours and hours
fine.
Ago, yeah.
And I like to have one drink, like, before we're doing the show, just to kind of loosen up, you know.
Yeah, it's peanut butter and jelly vodka.
This is Van Gogh PB&J vodka.
With
cranberry juice.
Nice. It's very
And it's funny because I worked for Van Gogh vodka when they, you know, I was a graphic designer there years ago, when they were first launching the PB&J flavor, because they were trying to compete with Pinnacle, who was having huge success with these kind of cheap flavors.
Yeah, nobody
vodkas.
Liked this flavor.
But nobody liked this flavor, but I kind of feel like it's weird. It's a little acquired taste, but you have to know what to mix it with.
They didn't know what to do with it.
If you mix it with grape juice is good. If you mix it with cranberry juice is good.
Yeah.
The best thing you can do with it, mix it with caramel vodka and Coke and put salt around the rim.
Salt the rim.
And it tastes just like a payday bar.
Yeah, it does. It's good.
But see, I don't think they make the PB&J vodka anymore. I think they discontinued it. Yeah, we found like an old bottle of it like in the back room of the liquor store.
In the Indian liquor store
like down the street. And
I
asked him about it.
And the dude looked at me like, what?
He had pants on his head. I think I have a couple bottles of
that
in the storeroom.
Yeah, he tried to get me to buy every damn bottle. He goes, nobody liked this.
I said, I know, I worked there at the time. I remember that they were like very disappointed. Because this was their big, I mean, you know, Van Gogh, they had all their, you know, cherry and espresso, like your regular ones, which are all very good. They're all naturally flavored. They're a little more expensive.
That was the problem. It could not compete with the artificially flavored Pinnacle.
It's twice the price. It's
twice the price. And the artificially flavored Pinnacle vodka actually tastes better. It's pretty damn good.
Depends on the flavor.
Yeah, it's cheap too, you know, very effective. The Pinnacle whipped cream is to die for.
I do love that stuff. But as far as Van Gogh goes, I mean, I can drink that espresso vodka like by itself. I don't have to mix it with anything. Right. That's how good it is. And the cherry also. But like I said, I think a lot of their flavors have been discontinued. We all got laid off like back in 2013 or whatever it was. But anyway, all right. So we do kind of sound like Alkies.
Yeah, sound like Alkies.
We're totally not. I promise.
We just connoisseurs.
We don't need a meeting or anything. Yeah. Don't worry.
We're
just connoisseurs.
We work from home, man. We make this schedule.
Yeah. So, you know, sometimes it's like Tuesday night and we got some shit to do.
And it's rare that we have a weekend off now. So we just work at home and have people over to do shows.
Yeah, we don't usually. Yeah. I mean, we do go out still, but I mean, we used to go out
2 or 3 times a week.
Yeah. I mean, when you and me first started going out, we went out almost every night.
Yeah, I don't know how we could afford it.
How is my liver still functioning?
I don't know.
That's what I'd like to know.
Bar tabs, man.
Yeah, so actually I drink a lot less than I used to.
Right.
Now it's just like, you know, maybe 2 or 3 nights a week we'll have a cocktail, you know, like Friday night, Saturday night. Or when we're doing the show, we'll have 1 or 2 just to kind of loosen up, you know.
Yeah. Yeah, we encourage the audience to go ahead and partake.
It's a fun thing to do.
If applicable. Alcohol is banned in some Arabic countries, so we can understand.
Well,
no reason to face the death penalty.
Right, and also if you're like a Mormon or something, they can't drink
either. Yeah, they can't even have caffeine.
Oh my God, I would die. Mm-hmm. What would I do without coffee?
I don't know.
Seriously,
become an apostate.
I suppose so.
Yeah.
But all right, so let's do some shout-outs.
Yeah.
Our latest movie review, if you haven't seen it, we went a little crazy and we did the Daniel Craig James Bond films.
Yeah, now
the 4 newest ones.
Now everybody we know is contacting us, man, I'm watching those James Bond movies.
Yeah, it's like, I never really wanted to watch them before, but now that you guys are talking about it, now it sounds kind of cool.
Yeah, Shauna wanted to see him.
Well, see, now that's what...
Trina Gloyd wanted to see him.
Yeah, that's what I thought, because I was like, like I said on the show, I've seen pretty much all the James Bond movies over the years, but it wasn't really anything I sought out. I usually just ended up watching them accidentally when they were like on cable or some shit.
Yeah.
But these ones are actually really good and really well made. So
yeah, and there is occult references in the second one. And there is some gnosis in all 4 of them. Occult gnosis. That's one of the reasons why we did that, or I recommended that show. It is relevant to our show.
Well, but I'm going to say, though, that on the next movie review, I kind of want to maybe go back to, like, maybe old horror sci-fi, because I have, like, a huge list of stuff I still got to get to.
Yeah, we can do that.
We'll see how that goes. Also, if you have checked out our Zazzle store lately, I put up 4 new shirt designs.
New and improved shirt designs.
And I think they're pretty fucking cool.
They look
good. I do say so myself.
I think they're a big improvement over the old ones. The old ones.
I did an Atlanta Ripper one. I did an H.H. Holmes one.
Yeah.
Those two are my favorite.
I really like Atlanta Ripper.
Yeah, that came out really nice. Like I said, you know, I'm a graphic designer by trade. That's what I went to school to do. But I approach things as very, like, laid back. A lot of times I don't have a picture in my head ahead of time, not usually, but I just kind of like look at the blank page and then I just kind of fuck around with stuff, like fuck around with letters and fuck around. And then like I end up with something and I'm like, so it's like surprising. I write like that too.
Yeah. So we got Atlanta Ripper. I really liked that one. The H.H. Holmes one. It's got a picture of H.H. Holmes with this hotel behind him.
The Murder Castle, yeah.
We got a new Demon Child. You're going to like this one. This is a good one.
Who Put Bella in the Witch Elm with like a skull and like a little dead tree.
I didn't see it.
I got those 4. I tried to do more. We were talking about, we wanted to do a little more like some simpler kind of designs. I said I wanted something that looked like an 80s misfit shirt or a cramp shirt where it was just kind of like white art with like one color.
Something you could wear to the club.
Yeah.
That's what I wanted.
I wanted something like that. And you wanted some stuff that you could wear that was a little more, not masculine necessarily, but that was just more stark and more striking.
Something looking kind of punk rock or something.
Yeah, because I tend to like doing more like complicated designs, yeah. You know, because I'm just into that kind of Baroque kind of look.
Yeah, I wanted more simplistic, masculine, kind of punk rock, goth.
Yeah. And I think they came out good.
I also wanted something kind of like a Joy Division album cover. We'll work on something like that later. They have that font and everything's real simple.
I have
designs.
That exact font.
Oh, do you?
It's called JD Closer.
Oh, okay.
Because our friends at Starry Night use that font. That's like their font of choice.
Something that would look good in like good goth day wear. You know what I mean? You can put your black pants on and your Doc Martens on and just walk around with that shirt. It'd look cool.
Yeah. You know? Exactly. My red Doc Martens. I also have blue and green plaid. Doc Martens.
Oh, I forgot about those.
I got those in the UK like many years ago back in the 90s. And they're still in good shape because they're Doc Martens. Also, if you would like to financially support the show, you can check out our Patreon at patreon.com/13oclockpodcast, or you can go to our blog, which is 13oclockpodcast.wordpress.com. And we would also like to welcome our newest big ticket patron, Jake.
Jake, yeah.
Thank you, man.
Thanks, man. Fantastic.
So yeah, that's pretty awesome.
I know.
Yeah, we're getting up there. We're getting up there in patrons, getting up there in subs.
Yeah.
Where's a little show that could.
Yeah. If there was only some way where we could get delivered to them a reasonably priced shirt, it'd be nice if we could get them some shirts.
I'm still kind of working on that. The shirts are really expensive and the shipping is really expensive. Yeah. So, I don't know. I'm gonna try and work that out. Because I do want like people to have shirts, but you know. So
that way we can transform them into walking billboards for 13 o'clock. No, just kidding. They're
you
nice.
Work for us.
Yeah. No, these are cool shirts. They look cool.
I want some. I'm gonna get some when I can afford it. Oh, and also be sure to check out our 13 o'clock subreddit, which I think I've said on the last couple shows. Our fan Duncan started it, and probably I think most or all of the episodes are up at this point. So if you're into Reddit and want to go talk to other fans of the show, then go and check that out. All right, now let's go to our news story. Since we're doing a true crime show today, we're doing the Alphabet Murders, otherwise known as the Double Initial Killings. I'm gonna mainly kind of focus on the original, like, unsolved ones, because there were actually two sets of these, and they're not entirely certain whether they were related or not, because they happened like across the country and a couple of years apart. So I'm kind of going to get into that. But since it's true crime, I always have to do a Golden State Killer update. Now, one thing that they've been doing since they found this motherfucker, you know, he committed so many crimes in California, and he was so wide ranging in the state at the time. The cops are pretty much pulling out all the cold cases that they have from that era and from those areas that they have DNA evidence for, and comparing it to the guy just in case, you know, something else might come up. So in that vein, they had actually been trying to solve a murder of a woman and her 4-year-old son. This is Rhonda Wicks. She was 24 years old and her 4-year-old son's name was Donald. They were murdered in Simi Valley in 1978. Now, the thing about this was that for many, many years, her ex-boyfriend, whose name was Craig Coley, he was in prison for this murder for 38 years.
Yeah, he told me about this. Yeah.
Now, in 2016, I believe, they started having doubts about it being him. And after they did a DNA comparison, it's that they found out that it wasn't him. So he had spent all this time in jail for a crime he didn't commit. Damn. So they eventually ended up letting him out. I believe it was last year or about a year and a half ago. So they kind of thought, since this happened in Simi Valley, since it happened around the same time as the original Night Stalker kind of murders, well, let's roll the dice. Maybe D'Angelo did this one too, because it obviously wasn't the boyfriend.
Right.
So there was a big article about it. And it's funny because one of our fans sent me a Facebook message about it. And I think they wrote the headline for maximum, like, you know, oh, Golden State Killer exonerated. I'm like, what?
Yeah.
He wasn't exonerated of any of the 12
murders.
Just
that one.
It was just this one.
Yeah.
And actually, the detectives on the case said, we didn't really think it was him, but we just thought it was a long shot. And we thought we had the DNA. We might as well.
Right.
You know, it could have been him. It was certainly possible. He was in the area at the time, but it was not him. So this murder of this woman and her kid are still unsolved because, you know, now that they know that the ex-boyfriend didn't do it, who's now his entire life.
Right.
Been spent in prison for something he didn't do.
Ridiculous.
Yeah.
And there's probably no legal recourse.
Yeah. It's like, I'm sure he'll get a gigantic settlement, but like, what good? Well, yeah, 38 years.
You would think that
he would. You'd have to get millions and millions of dollars because they would have to give you at least back pay.
A lot of times I hear that, like, the states have certain types of protection against that kind of shit, though, where you can't sue them because reasons, that type of deal. But we'll see.
Although I have heard of, and like you said, it might depend on the state, but I have heard of some people people that have spent large chunks of their life in prison and then they were exonerated, they usually get a very large settlement. Like I said, it would have to, because it would have to make up for all those years of lost wages.
Or you would at least get some kind of a disability where they'd cut you a check every month. You know what I mean?
Well, yeah, they would. They need to take care of your ass.
For 38 years, you're socially, you know, you have a social handicap. At that point. Because you don't have a work history.
38
you don't have,
years.
Yeah, no work history.
I was a little kid when this guy went to prison. It's like the world is entirely different now.
No social skills, civilian social skills for 38 years.
You can't get a job.
No.
You know, how are you supposed to get a job? He probably doesn't even, like, hardly know how to do it.
Well, you don't have any skills.
Yeah, that's what I mean.
Well, you don't have any real life skills.
Right.
And then what are you going to do? You go to an employer and says, I was wrongfully in prison for 38 years. They're going to go, man, that's terrible. But you know what?
You know, next.
I can't really do anything for you. You don't really know how to do anything.
That's what I mean. They can't, you know, they're not a charity too. So you can see it from their point of view also, as much as it sucks.
Yeah.
So that's why I do think, I mean, if they are sure that guy didn't do that, I mean, that dude, that's some compensatory shit.
You owe me $10 million.
That's what I mean.
That's what I'm going to say.
I need enough to, like, coast the rest of my life, okay?
Because buy a big house and just, I'm going to kick back.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, that's what I would do too. What else could you do?
Yeah. I just try to enjoy the time I had left.
Yeah. That's exactly what you'd have to do. So I do feel bad for this guy, but, you know, once he got let out, they said, well, maybe it was D'Angelo and maybe we can solve the case, but it wasn't him. So this is still unsolved, that murder. Now, the interesting thing is they happened to mention this, and I don't know if they mentioned it in something else, but remember how we were wondering when we did the update on the original Night Stalker murders, we weren't sure how they had gotten his DNA exactly, like what item exactly they had taken from him.
From the crime scene?
Yeah. And actually what they did was the first thing they did was they followed him because he was under surveillance.
Yeah.
They followed him to a Hobby Lobby and he was in there buying some shit and they took DNA from his car door handle.
Damn.
When he was in the store.
They can get DNA off a car door handle.
Well,
just your sweat?
Yeah.
Wow. I thought it was only like bodily fluids.
No, man.
They've gotten so good they can just do it with sweat.
Yep.
Damn.
And then after that, when it came back a match, then they went through his garbage and got a tissue.
Wow.
That he had blown his nose on or wiped his hands
on. You can't run from DNA. Not now.
Nope.
They got that down to a science.
What a funny thing to say. DNA, yes. It's down to a science.
They got it down to a science.
Right, okay. But yeah, so like I said, this murder is still unsolved, but it wasn't D'Angelo. And it wasn't that poor bastard that was in jail for almost 40 years.
Yeah, I feel for you, dude, if you're out there. Yeah,
that sucks a lot.
That's bad.
All right, so now let's get to the main topic. And today we're talking about the Alphabet murders. And this is an interesting case because there's so many, like, weird tendrils to it. Like I said, the original series of Alphabet murders, like, it's probably better known as the double initial killings, were actually a series of three murders of little girls aged 10 to 12 in Rochester, New York in the early 1970s. The thing that seemed to tie these three murders together was that all three victims, their first and last names started with the same letter, and where their bodies were found, the city name also started with the same letter as their names, which would seem to imply a serial killer with a weird OCD kind of fetish. There is still a lot of, you know, I'll kind of get into this later, but, you know, there's still a lot of controversy over, you know, whether this was one killer, whether it was two killers. You know, they're not entirely certain. But the weird thing about it is that years later, because these happened from 1971 to 1973. Years later, from 1977 to about the early 90s, there were another four murders of women with their first and last name starting with the same letter.
Weird.
But it was in California.
Huh.
But they caught that guy.
Okay.
But I don't know if the same guy is responsible. It's just, it's so weird. It's just so weird. It's kind of well known, I guess, in the upstate New York kind of area, but it's not usually one that comes up. There's a couple documentaries about it. I saw there's a show called Dark Minds. I can't remember the name of the guy that hosts it. He's a crime writer. And he went and interviewed all the detectives who originally worked on the case. They're all retired now because it was a long time ago. There's that. And I think there was one other documentary on it, but that was about it. I didn't find like a lot of other podcasts about it or anything. So maybe it's not as big ticket a case, even though it's super, super weird. So the first victim of this purported serial killer, her name was Carmen Colon. This was November 16th, 1971. Now, she had been sent on an errand by her family. She was going to a farm pharmacy to pick up a prescription for her mom. Mm-hmm. And then she was also, I think she was supposed to drop off some food like at her grandfather's house. This was in Rochester, New York. She was 10 years old. Now she goes, apparently she's in the pharmacy and the prescription isn't ready yet. And now some people later on said that she was acting like she was in a hurry. You know what I mean? Because, yeah. After what happened to her, people were kind of thinking, well, maybe someone was waiting for her, like, right. out in the cupboard. I mean, this was only like a block or two away from her house. It wasn't like super far or anything.
Right.
But they think someone might have been waiting for her, like in a car or something. They're not super sure. So evidently she goes in, they say she's in a hurry. So she goes back outside and then she disappears. On the same day, at least 38 motorists who are driving down the 490, as I believe the name of the highway, they see a half-naked little girl running down the shoulder of the road, like just tearing ass down the road. And then there's a car going in reverse that's like trying to catch up with her. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
She has like no pants on.
Damn.
And she was like screaming and waving her arms. 10. She's 10. Now, the horrible thing is that no one stopped to help her.
Damn.
And they're not entirely sure why. You know, police said later that the people did come forward and said that they had seen her, but later. Yeah. They said, well, when we were driving by, we weren't entirely sure what we were looking at.
Yeah, it might have been a family dispute or, you know.
Right, like so.
That. Maybe a mentally handicapped girl.
Right, shitty, but you're not really, you know, maybe you people know. Were like, oh, I don't know what's going on. That's their family. That's their business. I'm not getting involved. But nobody stopped. That was the last time she was seen. 2 days later, there are two little boys and they're riding their bicycles near this town called Chi Lai, and they find her half-naked body. She has been raped and manually strangled.
Yeah.
Pretty violent beating also. Her skull is fractured.
They know it was the same
one. She's just been left in a ditch.
And they know it was the same one that was seen in the freeway.
Right. They're assuming. Because like I said, they said it was a girl with no pants. She was found with no pants. All she had on was a sweater.
Weird.
They said she was a little dark-haired girl, about 10 years old, which she was. So yeah, they find her in a ditch. Now, nobody thought anything about a pattern at the time. But it would become important later that her first and last names, Carmen Cologne, start with a C. Also, the place where she was found, Chi Lai, also starts with a C. Now, some sources say Churchville, but that also starts with a C, too. But that's where her body was dumped. I think it was kind of on the line between.
I'm just not buying this.
Well, that's what... I'll get to that.
Okay.
I'll get to that, because there's still kind of controversy.
Okay.
So they did recover the girl's pants. It looked like they had kind of just been thrown out of a car window, like some distance away. Now, the first suspect that they kind of focused on, there were actually two suspects. On one of the documentaries that I watched, where the guy was interviewing four of the investigators that had worked on the case. Now, two of the main investigators, they were partners, but they said, now each of us had a different idea about who the main suspect was. One of the guys said, well, there was this one guy, they didn't name him, because he actually died later and he was never charged or anything. So there's like a legal thing. So I don't know what his name is, but they said he was like a kitchen worker. Now, he had been seen around the area where Carmen disappeared around the time she had been gone. And then subsequently, after she was found, he skipped town. They also found it interesting that the kitchen where he worked, his time card had not been machine stamped, but he had written in the time that the murder had taken place, and they thought that was very suspicious.
Right.
So the one investigator thought maybe it's that guy.
Right.
And they found out when they kind of looked into his background that he had kind of been suspected of, it was either sexual assault or something like that, like toward a 15-year-old girl.
Right.
So they thought that was very fishy, but they couldn't find him, like he took off. Now, the other person that they were interested in, and this is the other investigator thought was the main suspect, was Carmen's uncle, Miguel. Now, almost all sources say uncle. One source I saw said that he was actually Carmen's mother's common-law husband. But I'm going to go with uncle because that's what pretty much everybody says.
Okay.
That was like her relation. Now, an interesting thing was that the car that had been seen following Carmen going in reverse was a small gray car, most people said, which is the same kind of car that Miguel had. Miguel also skipped town a couple days after the murder. When they looked in his car, they found one of Carmen's dolls and some of her hair, and it looked like the car had been cleaned. The car was new, but it looked like it had been cleaned out.
There's a killer right there.
Well, but wait a minute, though.
You think there's more?
There's more.
Okay.
So they thought he was a very strong suspect, too. So, but like I said, these two detectives were kind of like, this one guy thought it was maybe the kitchen worker. This other guy thought it was Miguel. Miguel, the uncle, but they had both taken off and they couldn't locate either one of them. So that's kind of where it stood. They think that he took off for Puerto Rico because that's where he was originally from. Carmen Colon, her family was Puerto Rican. So they couldn't find him. He disappeared into the jungle or some shit like that. Now, as I said, they were sort of investigating this as just a standalone crime. But then in spring of 1973, there's another little girl in the same area, roughly the same area. Her name is Wanda Walkowitz, and she is 11 years old, little redheaded girl with freckles. And she was supposed to go, same kind of thing. She got sent on a little errand to go pick up some groceries by her mom. I've seen like a reconstruction of where her house was at the time, where the store was. It was literally like a block away, not even a block. Yeah. It was like right there. So she goes and also disappears. Now, they actually found her either the same day or the next day. I mean, this was not a case of a killer hiding these bodies. This was someone raping and murdering girls and just dumping them like on the side of a road so that they would be found. Now, the interesting thing about this, again, she has her first and last names start with the same initial, W.
Okay.
The place where she was found was called Webster. She was found behind a rest stop. So at that point, they started making a connection between the two because there were a lot of similarities. Both girls had been raped and strangled. They were from the same, you know, kind of neighborhood. They both came from kind of lower middle class sort of neighborhood. Both of them had learning difficulties, developmental disorders, behavioral issues, things of that nature. Both of them were Catholics, and they had both been kidnapped at the same time of the afternoon going on particular errands. But there were a couple of differences too. Now, Carmen had been found half naked. The beating and strangulation had been quite violent. There were a lot of like cuts on her face. Her skull was fractured. She had been strangled by hand from the front. Wanda was actually found fully dressed, although she had also been raped. She had been strangled, but not by hand. She had been strangled with a ligature, probably a rope or a belt, from behind. So now they're kind of not sure. I mean, obviously there seems like there's a connection because of the names and because of the similar victim profile, but the method of their murder is not exactly the same. So they're still working on this case a few months later, and this is the fall of the same year, it's November of 1973, and then there was a third one. And actually, I'm going to take a break right now.
Okay.
Because it's like right at the halfway point, and then I'll talk about the third victim, and then we'll kind of talk about the other shit that happened later on, like in California. Stuff like that. So we're going to take a break right now and we'll be back in just a few minutes.
Okay, everybody. Jenny's got some new shirt designs up. Four of them. Really good ones, too. Atlanta Ripper, Who Put Bella in the Witch Elm, the H.H. Holmes Murder Castle, and of course, Demon Child, because man said he could. These are updated designs. I think they look really cool. Jenny did a great job on them. Were they fun making, Jenny?
They were very fun. And thank you very much. I think they came out very good.
Yeah, they came really good. They're very high quality shirts. Jenny and I wear our own shirts at certain times when we're trying to put a spotlight on ourselves. And you can put a spotlight on yourselves. If you go ahead and pick up one of these shirts today, you guys are going to love them. Links in the description, www.zazzle.com at 13 o'clock.
Yeah, so go check out our store at www.zazzle.com/13 o'clock. We got these four cool new t-shirt designs, plus all our old ones if you'd rather get one of the old ones. But these ones are awesome, and you should check them out.
They're also available in women's cut, and they look really cute. Jenny's got some.
So thank you. Go check them out.
The Villisca Axe Murders, Interkaifeck Bond, The Axe Man of New Orleans, The Cleveland Torso, Who Put Bella in the Witch Elm, The Solder Children, The Phantom Killer, The Black Dahlia, Summerton. What is it about these unsolved murders that still fascinates us long after the cases have gone cold? Is it simply that we enjoy being able to come up with our own theories about what happened to the unfortunate victims? Or are we intrigued by the terrifying possibility that the killers are still out there somewhere? Take a grisly journey through the blood-soaked avenues of early 20th century crime in the new book, The Faceless Villain, Volume 1, by Jenny Ashford, now available on Amazon.
The Unseen Hand, a new exploration of poltergeist phenomena, by Jenny Ashford, author of The Rochdale Poltergeist, House of Fire and Whispers, and the Mammoth Mountain Poltergeist. The Unseen Hand is a comprehensive collection of over 100 reported poltergeist cases from the first century to the present day. All the best-known cases are presented, from the Bell Witch to Jeff the Talking Mongoose, from Rosenheim to Tina Resch, from Enfield to the Entity, A large selection of fascinating and lesser-known accounts from all over the world are also included, and all contain testimony from the most eerie and extraordinary events. The Unseen Hand is the ultimate compendium for readers interested in poltergeist disturbances throughout history and the theories behind what causes them. On sale now from Amazon in print, ebook, and audiobook formats. Go to Unseen Hand Book on Facebook and visit www.jennyashford.com for more information.
Okay, we're back. So now it's November of 1973. It's been probably only about 6 months since Wanda Walkowitz has been murdered. And then there was another little girl. Her name was Michelle Maenza. She was 11 years old, or was about to turn 11. And she was actually taken. What happened to her? And this is very sad. Her mom had actually been at this shopping center the day before and had lost her purse there. So the following day, Michelle goes out to search the shopping center for her mom's purse, and she can't find it. Now, apparently Michelle's uncle saw her at the shopping center, like looking around, and said, "Hey, I'll give you a ride home." And she said no. But that was the last time she ever got seen. She got taken by somebody. 2 days later, she was found in a town called Macedon. Starts with an M, just like her name's.
Man, here we go. Okay.
So she had also been raped. She was found fully clothed, just like Wanda was. She had also been strangled with a rope or a belt from the back, just like Wanda was. Another similarity that was something different than what happened with Carmen was that the second and third victims had actually been fed by their killer. Mm. Wanda had frozen custard in her stomach, and Michelle had a hamburger in her stomach. Okay. So, and these were foods that were not at their house, and they hadn't purchased them or anything like that. So they're kind of thinking that whoever picked them up, because it was obviously someone had picked them up in a car, yeah, or lured them into a car, forced them into a car.
Some kind of a ruse.
Yeah, that they actually took them to get some food. Now, they're also thinking that they may have either redressed them after they were dead, or allowed them, or raped them and then let them put their clothes back on and then killed them.
Right.
But this little girl was also found dumped, and just like the other two victims, she kind of came from a lower middle class neighborhood. She kind of had some learning disabilities. She was kind of overweight, got teased a lot. She hung out with like younger kids.
Yeah.
So like I said, the victim profile of the three of these girls is very similar. Now,
he's not taking them by force. He's using some kind of a ruse.
That's what they're thinking. It has to
get them into the car.
Yeah.
And maybe have something to do with promises of food.
That's, yeah.
And maybe could be he's impersonating a relative or something like that, or
someone
knowing
that they know.
Impersonating somebody they know.
Because, I mean, you know, I know every time a child gets abducted, you know, their family would say, oh, they would never get in the car with a stranger and stuff, like, which I don't think is always the case, because I think sometimes if predators are good at that kind of shit, they can sometimes talk their way into it, pretending to be friendly. And
for all you know, they approach the kid and flash a badge and tell them that they're an undercover cop.
Right,
and their
they
parents,
could do that also.
There's, you know, there's been an emergency and their parents, you know, been hurt and that we got to go type of deal.
Yeah.
And on the way, that, hey, let's get something to eat on the way, you know what I mean? And,
yeah.
Or something like that.
And they were thinking too, and I think some of the investigators said this on the documentary, that the fact that the killer fed these two girls,
right. They're
like, that kind of makes them think that he lured them into the car. Because he's kind of like, look, he gets them into the car. Look, I'm your friend, or I'm a friend of your mom. I'm a cop
him.
Or something.
Yeah.
And then he's like, I'll get you a burger. And then he's like, well, he has to go get him a burger now, because if he goes somewhere else, they're going to be like, hey, what are you doing? I thought you were going to give me a hamburger. So, you know what?
Right.
So he's trying to establish trust, is I think what happens.
Yeah, the weird thing is that there's a risk, because you go through her stomach and you find out what she ate, you might be able to identify where that exactly came from, go to that restaurant and say, do you remember this girl? Who was she with?
Well, the interesting thing was that in the case of Michelle Maenza, there actually was a witness that saw a girl that fit her description sitting in a car at a fast food restaurant, and she looked like she was crying. And somebody saw like a guy coming out with a bag of food, and it was a beige car. That's about all they could remember. And they actually did get a police sketch from that.
Right.
But it didn't really
That's
help.
Weird that she was crying and she didn't run, which leads me to believe that he had told her something that made her cry, but it didn't scare her enough to get her to run away.
It
had to have been something to do with something happened to your mom and dad back home. That's some shit like that.
Yeah, because you know how they do. You know, like those people that like abduct kids and stuff. They have all kind of fucking stories.
Right.
And, you know, it's kids will, if you say that you're a cop, if you say you're an authority figure, if you say, I know your mom and stuff, like some kids are going to fall for that. that.
Yeah.
You know, they don't know.
Right.
Some adults would fall for that.
Why do you flash a badge and go, what's your name? And, you know, and she goes, you know, my Maria something or other. And he goes, okay, what's your mother's name? And then all of a sudden he knows her name. The and he goes, okay, you're the one I'm looking for. Your mom is at the hospital.
Yeah.
We got to go get her. It's going to be something like that.
Now, the situation arises that because obviously the second and third, Wanda and Michelle, that was the same perpetrator. It was almost exactly the same MO. The first one, they're not entirely sure because there were, even though it was very similar in a lot of ways, it was kind of different. That one was way more violent than the other two.
Yeah.
You know, the fact that they had been fed, the fact that they were found with their clothes on, things like that. So most of the detectives in the case kind of lean toward maybe Carmen having been killed by her uncle, Miguel, because that seemed like a more personal crime.
Yeah.
And then the second two being killed by someone else, like a serial killer.
Right.
You know, they're not sure, but that's mostly what the detectives are leaning toward. Now, there were a couple of other suspects, too. There was this one guy who was a firefighter, and he kind of came onto their radar because he was arrested pretty much in the act of trying to rape a 15-year-old girl, like in a garage.
Hmm.
Now, when they looked into his history, they found that he had worked in fire stations very near the neighborhoods of the three girls, like at the times that they were taken.
Yeah.
His name was James Termini, I believe. But when they actually chased him and went after him, he killed himself.
Wow.
However, later on, after they got, because they only got DNA from the Wanda, Wanda Walkowitz case. They had semen that was left in her underwear.
Right.
So they actually exhumed him later on and got some DNA from his femur and compared it, and it wasn't the same.
It wasn't him.
But, you know, he did a bunch of other bad shit.
Right.
Now, interestingly, Miguel Colon, the uncle, he was gone for quite a while. Like, he ran off to Puerto Rico, they think, and he went off in the jungle somewhere. But he did eventually come back to New York, and they were able to, I don't know. So it's like the documentary says, well, he kind of turned himself in, but he didn't really do that. But the problem was what ended up happening with him is that the cops came to his house because there was like a domestic dispute. Like, he was fighting with his wife and his brother-in-law, and he shot at them. Like, he didn't kill them.
Right.
And then the cops came and he told the cops to shoot him and they didn't. So he shot himself.
Right.
So he is also dead.
Okay.
So there's no way of knowing, you know, whether he did it. Like I said, most of the detectives kind of lean toward Miguel, like the uncle being responsible for the first one. And then the other two being the work of an unknown serial killer. It's not positive, but that's kind of what they're leaning toward. There was also the initial kitchen worker that they thought of, that one of the detectives that was his main suspect. They actually ended up tracking him down, but by the time they tracked him down, he was also dead.
Hmm.
And they figured that he hadn't been in Rochester when the second and third girls were killed. So it probably wasn't him. At that stage, the case went cold. Like I said, they just called them the Alphabet Murders. And like I said, they're not entirely sure if the fact of the girls having the same first and last name initials and being dumped in a town with the same, they're not certain if that was just a weird coincidence.
Sounds statistical to me.
Right. Now, some of the detectives, there's two points of view on this. Like, most of the detectives that worked on the case, they're like, look, well, considering the fact that we don't think all three of them are the same killer, these are two separate killers.
Yeah.
So now we're just talking about two victims. He's like, so I just think that's statistical.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know, because you'd have to establish, like, mathematically, how common is it for people to have the same initial for their first name. It can't be that uncommon.
These are Latin names though, right?
No, just the first one.
Just the first one was?
Just the first one. You know, so not entirely sure. But then this documentary I saw, they talked to an FBI profiler and he said, no, I don't think it was a coincidence. Like, I think this was some kind of thing that this guy had. Yeah. And there was, they actually talked to an unnamed serial killer who's now like a, you know, he's like a Hannibal Lecter type of thing where he helps out the police with other cases. And in his opinion, he's like, those letters meant something to this guy. That was, it was like his thing. But if that is the case, then this is a very, then this guy is, knows these girls.
He has, like, to know their first and last
name. He has to know their first and last names.
Yeah.
And he is deliberately going and dumping them somewhere that will have the same letter.
Yeah.
So that's implies some planning that maybe the rest of the aspects of the crime don't really demonstrate. Now, some people online, because people are going crazy with this alphabet thing, they're like, some people online have said, do you know that the letters of the girls' names are C, W, and M? They're like, that's actually the third, the 13th, and the 23rd letter of the alphabet, you know, which, yeah. So they're like, maybe he's some like weird numerical, like,
I don't know, I think
something like that. But yeah, I kind of think that too. Yeah. But the serial killer, the unnamed serial killer that was on this documentary, he was all about that. He's like, look, it's 333. And he's like, look, if I double that, then it's 6, 26, 46. He's like, maybe that's that guy's birthday.
All right.
You know, maybe he's a cancer. Like, so he was kind of getting into it. And he was a kind of, I don't know if he was a pedophile killer like this guy was, but he was a similar kind of serial killer. And if he was into that aspect of it, maybe this other dude was too.
Maybe.
There's no telling. So, you know, they're not really sure about that. But then this weird shit happened.
Okay.
Yeah. So this happened in California. One of the murders was in 1977. One was in 1978. One was in 1993. And one was in 1994. All four of these women, now they were not girls. These were in their 20s. I believe the oldest one was maybe 37. Now that I think about it. But all four of these women, their first and last name started with the same letter. And as a matter of fact, one of the victims was named Carmen Colon, just like the first little girl in Rochester, New York. So that's why people thought that was a little strange. The other victims of that series were Carmen Colon, Pamela Parsons, Roxine Rogash, and Tracy Tafoya. Now, these were all, like I said, these were older women, you know, mostly in their 20s, some links to prostitution, although some of their families have denied that, but they do think that some of them are linked to prostitution. Now, they caught this guy. His name is Joseph Nasso. They didn't actually catch him until 2011, but this dude, he's like the original, he's like an original Night Stalker type dude. He's one of those like old, I mean, they didn't catch him until he was in his 70s.
Right.
He's one of these old, angry motherfuckers.
Right.
Now, how they caught him was he was actually on parole for stealing women's underwear.
Okay.
Like from fucking, from a store or something.
Oh, stealing from a store?
And he got, I mean, he'd been arrested for other things like prior to that, but he'd been arrested for theft. He was on parole. His parole officer shows up at his house for an unannounced visit, and he sees some shit in his house that he's not supposed to have. Like guns and ammunition and some various things. And so he's like, okay, well, you're not really supposed to have this shit. And then one of the cops notices, the guy was a photographer. He notices all these pictures of, he did not fetish necessarily, but he did like kind of cheesecake kind of photos and stuff. And he's like, some of the women in these photos looked dead.
Oh.
So that was a little suspicious. So they arrested the guy and he actually ended up going on trial. You know, the more they searched through his house, dude has what the prosecutors called a rape diary.
Oh, shit.
And it's pretty much exactly what it sounds like. It's just like this book where he's basically talking about women that he's raped and women that he wants to rape.
Right.
He had three notebooks full of rape fantasies about this girl or this woman, she was in her 20s, that used to live like in the same apartment building as him.
Damn.
And she didn't know till later on, like after she had already moved away and forgotten about the dude. She called him Crazy Joe. She said, we didn't know. He was just like this angry, weird motherfucker and we didn't like him. But she had since moved away with her husband and, you know, they had forgotten all about him. And then investigators called her and said, you know, there's three notebooks full of shit about this guy talking about he wants to rape and kill you. They wouldn't tell her what it said in there though. And I was like, yeah, well, I don't think I would want to know that either.
Now, the women in the photographs, did they ever identify him?
Not that I know of. Now, what his excuse was, was that, he's like, oh, I'm a photographer and I'm into this kind of like cheesecake photo type of thing. So these are all willing women that posed this way, like posed as if they're dead and stuff. Okay. And they even had like his ex-wife. I think she testified at his trial. He represented himself.
Okay.
I read some of his testimony like at the trial and he really, really sounds like a complete and total asset.
Yeah.
I mean, like, as he would. He just sounds like an arrogant douche. And like, even when he got, because he did get convicted of those four murders of the, so they call him the alphabet killer now because those four women had all the same thing going on with the letters. And there's actually a picture of him going around the internet. I'll put it on the YouTube video where he got convicted and he just like flicked off the camera.
Yeah.
Like a douche. Like a you know what I mean? He's just crabby. He looks like a crabby, angry old man.
Right. Yeah.
You know what I mean? He just looks like a, like a bastard.
Damn.
Now, for a while, they thought, okay, now here's the creepy thing. Joseph Nasso, like I said, he's killed all these people in California, but in his little rape diaries and in all his little notebooks, he seems to be making references to murders and rapes in other areas.
Okay.
Some of them, I think what first ticked police off was the thing where he said something about Buffalo, like Buffalo, New York. And then they found out that this guy used to live in Rochester, New York. Now, he had moved away from Rochester by 1969, but he still had family there and went back and forth there all the time.
Now, remind me, what was happening in Rochester?
Those were the first three, the little girls.
The little girls.
Now, here's the thing. They're like, okay, well, the fact of these four women that have the letter thing and these three little girls that have the letter thing, and he used to live in Rochester.
Did he ever explain the letter thing once he got busted?
No.
No?
But like I said, he might have, I think he raped and murdered other women too that they never pinned on him or that they never identified. Yeah. Because this is one of those guys where he's probably been moving around and killing people all over the place. And they don't know because they haven't, you know, got them all together. They haven't matched the case up.
And what did you say he did for a living? He was a photographer.
Photographer.
That was it? That was what he did for a living?
Yeah. Well, he did, you know, he did wedding photography and all kind of other shit. Because they said at his trial, he took normal photographs too.
Right, yeah.
Like, you know, that's how he made his money.
Okay, I didn't know if he was an amateur
photographer. No. He was a professional photographer. Yeah, okay. Yeah, he did weddings and shit. So there are a bunch of cases that he didn't put anybody's names in this notebook. He would just say, like,
so
he would just say, like, where it was, like, oh, I raped this girl, like, outside of whatever the town name was.
Right.
So they're trying to match shit up with,
now,
like,
does he also
unsolved
say
case.
Killed the girl? Did he also say he kills her, or is he just saying rape?
He mostly just says rape.
Right.
And the thing about, I don't know, I think he did actually say a couple of times, or he said euphemistically that he had killed them. He'd say something like, you know, I'll give it to her, or I'll do it to her, or something like that.
Yeah.
It's like, you know what I mean? So it could say either thing. And now his excuse at trial was that, oh, well, these are all just fantasies. I'm into that kind of stuff and blah, blah, blah.
Right.
Jury didn't buy it. He got the death penalty. So he's actually in prison now. But the problem is that, you know, now they're like, it can't be a coincidence with the Rochester thing because he was from there. But you know what? They took his DNA. Not a match.
No.
Not a match.
Damn.
And I'm like, how weird is that? And the weird thing, too, is that one of the victims had the exact same name.
Wow.
Isn't that creepy?
Yeah.
Now, they asked one of the investigators on this documentary I saw. They said, well, what? They're like, two of them had the same name. How can that be? He's like, yeah, but I mean, in the Puerto Rican community, Carmen Colon is a really common name.
Yeah,
There's thousands of girls named that.
John Smith.
It's like, it could totally be just a random, like a weird coincidence, which it could be. That's, you know, that's fine. But you would think, because there's so many similarities.
Yeah.
But the thing, though, I mean, he also raped and strangled these women, but these women were older. You don't usually see, like, a pedophilic sort of serial killer that goes after 10, 11-year-old girls. And then goes up to, like, you know, regular, like, 20s, women in their 20s and 30s. It's not unheard of, but it's very, very unusual.
Yeah. Well, all this shit is unusual. Even a pedophile murderer is very unusual.
Yeah.
Usually a pedophile has no will to kill a child. They love the child.
Yeah.
It's just very rare that they actually kill them.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's the same thing as rapists. There's a lot of rapists. They rarely kill the woman. Mostly just rape them. They let them go.
Although some of them, like Original Night Stalker, Golden State Killer, he works up to it.
Yeah.
Because all that time he was just raping, and then he decided, oh, I'm just going to kill him too.
I think I remember reading that for every one rapist who kills the woman, and we know those are serial killers, for every one of those, there's like 500 just straight up rapists, like a serial rapist. They just rape.
I believe
them. Yeah, that they're doing.
That might be a conservative estimate.
Yeah, that they're doing the heavy lifting of rape in the fucking in the world. It's just a regular serial rapist.
Well, because I mean, so many women are raped.
Yeah,
it's not. There are a lot of rapists out there, but most rapists have multiple victims.
Yeah, most rapists have multiple victims, and most of those rapists are not actually killing them.
Yeah.
They're letting them go.
Now, the interesting thing about the original series of the little girls in Rochester, they were asking this, you know, incarcerated serial killer about why the girls were just dumped in plain sight, why they were dumped the way they were. His insight, if you want to call it that, was he's like, I don't think that this killer hates these girls. I think he wanted the companionship. I think he only killed them because he had to, because it was a witness. He's like, he dumped them where they would be found because he didn't want to do them any further harm.
Yeah.
He didn't want their bodies to rot.
Weird.
That's what he said.
Wow.
And I was just kind of like, that makes sense, but it's like, that is so fucking creepy, man.
Yeah.
But that's what they think like.
Yeah.
That's
I'll tell you, just getting on serial rapists. I remember a case back from the 90s where this guy came in through the windows, raped her, and boy, she got him good though, because what she did was after he was done, he sat there and wanted to talk with her, you know? So she talked with him and said, she said, when are you going to come back?
Yeah.
Like, are you going to come back? And he's like, wait, you want me to come back? He goes, yeah, come back. And he goes, what's your number? Can I call you? And he gave her number.
Idiot.
Because he was so arrogant.
Yeah.
He thought, oh, well, this girl likes me. So that is
hilarious in a twisted way.
Yeah, he gave her his number. And she goes, okay, thanks, I'll call you. He goes, yeah, call me.
She was
and then he left. She went right to the cops. He goes, there's his number. Gave his name and his number.
It's like, look at his fucking retard.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
That probably works on a percentage
yeah.
of them.
Yeah.
If they're that stupid or that cocky.
They're so arrogant in that case.
That they actually think.
She likes me.
Oh, yeah. My magical dick, like,
exactly.
turned it around.
Exactly. He was young, if I remember correctly, he was like only like 22, 23. So he was just, motherfucker was unwise. I mean, you just committed a fucking classy felony.
You did.
You know what I mean? And you're all right, you know? You gonna come back? Yeah. You want me to come back? Sure. What's your number? Can I call you?
Yeah, we'll go to the
movies. Yeah. You're going to. Yeah.
I'll go to the movies with my fucking rapist. Idiot. You're a fucking idiot. I hope you're dead now. But yeah, so I wanted to mention, we're kind of getting to the end of the show a little bit, but I wanted to mention that actually one of the bigger suspects, the better known suspects of this was the infamous Ken Bianchi, the Hillside Strangler.
Oh,
or actually one of the Hillside Stranglers, because it was actually him and his cousin going around doing this stupid shit. Now, he was also a kidnapper, a rapist, a serial killer, and going around strangling women. And he actually went after a couple underage girls, too. Now, the thing about him, even though that mostly happened in Los Angeles, that bitch was from Rochester also.
Okay.
Everybody's from Rochester. Yeah. I'm not. I'm from here. But all the serial killers are from Rochester. Sorry, Rochester.
Yeah.
No, I'm just saying that this guy was also, he was born in Rochester, New York. So obviously they were like, oh, serial killer.
Yeah.
He's gone after some underage girls. He went after underage ones and, you know, ones in their 20s and 30s. So they're like, well, we have to check him out too. Now, I think he ended up murdered 12 women, I think. And then I don't even think they know how many rapes he did, him and his stupid cousin. He actually did almost all of his crimes in tandem with his dirtbag cousin, Angelo Buono. He committed a couple crimes on his own, but I don't think they were underage girls. It was mostly just him and the other guy, like, kind of working together. But they very, very recently did a DNA. He is in prison now.
Yeah.
They did a DNA trying to match him to the murder of Wanda Walkovich in 1973 from Rochester, New York. Not a match. So, what the fuck? Who fucking did this, man?
I don't know.
Like, I am willing to concede that probably the first girl, Carmen Colon, the 10-year-old, that was probably her uncle.
Okay.
Most of the cops in the case seem to think it was probably her uncle. Like I said, the cases were similar, but there was enough differences to think that maybe whoever killed her probably knew her. It seemed more personal than the other two. So I think there's a possibility that Carmen was killed by her uncle. He's dead now, so they can't.
Yeah.
He killed himself. Yeah. So that seems weird. And it seemed weird
seems
that he
likely.
Took off.
Yeah.
So it seems kind of likely that he was the one that did that, even though his family are adamant that, no, he would never do such a thing. But, you know, that's what they always
say.
They always say. But the other two girls, who the fuck did that? And
I don't know.
And the weird thing with the letters, it's like, I know. It might be a coincidence.
It's somebody who got away with it.
Yeah.
You know, so you say who it is.
Unless
it's somebody
who
got away with it.
But like I said, they do have DNA on the case, just in Wanda's case.
He's
so
probably dead by now.
Probably.
Yeah.
And, you know, the crazy thing about this case was that there were just so many likely suspects.
Yeah.
And is it just because there's so many, like, dirtbags around? It's like,
maybe there's a lot of dirtbags around there at that time.
There must have been, because it's like they just had no shortage.
You know,
they were like, hey, here's this rapist over here, and here's this scumbag over here.
Through your research, I'm sure you've noticed, I mean, because I know you have because you've mentioned it to me, at certain places and at certain times, it becomes a vortex of shitbags.
Yeah.
It might go on for about a 20-year period in a town or in a small city, and then it goes away. But if you were to drive to that city today, say like 30 years later or 40 years later, that city's not really there in the form that it used
that
to be.
That it was, yeah.
It's, you know what I mean? Everything's
it's
torn down.
It's almost like some kind of
gone.
Weird, like, synergy. And that's
why.
Well,
I think as the economy becomes depressed, it gets crappier and crappier and crappier. There's not much jobs. People are moving away. It starts to become kind of post-apocalyptic.
And there's
and
a
during,
lot of transient
there's a lot of transient
people
stuff,
going in
and
out,
you have
sure.
people who have lost their job. They don't have much of a future. They go nuts or, you know, not really go nuts, but they start falling into bad behavior.
Yeah,
drugs come in.
Alcohol,
and
sure.
And the next thing you know, crime and then serial rape, serial murder, kind of like maggots feeding on a dying corpse of a fucking town.
That's a very good analogy,
kind of like that,
yeah.
And then once it gets to that stage, then all of a sudden there's flight from the area. You know what I mean? It just vanishes.
And
you know,
then after a time, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I lived in Detroit.
And then after a time, either the city collapses or it becomes regentrified. People move back in. It's a whole new population and it doesn't,
I lived in Detroit in the late 80s for, about 18 months, you know? And before I joined into the Army. Detroit existed at that time. I see photographs of it now. And most of it's gone.
Yeah, a lot of
it's just not there. It's just torn down.
Yeah.
It's gone.
which is weird.
Which is what that's happening on smaller scales in other places.
Yeah. But like I said, that's kind of, and I was talking to somebody on YouTube about it, about this whole thing where I kind of got fascinated with all these cases that were revolving around London, Ontario in the 60s, just because there were so many.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, that guy wrote a whole book about it called Murder City, and it was just like murder after murder after murder. And it was more than one killer. It wasn't just like one serial killer killing all these people. It was a bunch of different ones. It was like between 6 to 8 different killers.
Like I said, it's a local synergy. It's something going on in the local. It's like I said, maggots feeding off of Ryan Corp.
That's what kind of got me interested in this whole geographical. Yeah.
It seems like it's something that happens in an area that's dying economically.
And I think I might have mentioned this a little bit when we were recording our 100th episode last night. I remember that I said, I don't know if it's just because some states or some cities keep better records, so it's easier to like pull records about murders and papers and stuff. But it's like, what the hell is going on with fucking Iowa? Because I have found so many unsolved murders in Iowa.
Well, a serial killer can pop up anywhere. They can pop up in the middle class areas, you know, like DeLangelo did.
Sure.
But when you're talking about 4 or 5 of them all in the same area, that's usually an area that's falling apart.
Or it's somewhere that, like, I think what happened with London, Ontario was that it was a fairly large city, but it had been somewhat isolated.
Yeah.
But just recently, it had got a new highway. It had opened up to all this new traffic.
Yeah.
And because it was equidistant between Detroit and Toronto, you were getting like all these people driving through suddenly that had never, you know what I mean? So they think that might have been a factor.
Like
also.
It loosened the floodgates and freed up some of the scum to run around.
To run around in there. Right. Where before, you know, you wouldn't necessarily have gone there.
Right.
But now it's like, now it's all opened up. So now you're getting all the shitheads.
Yeah, you have shitheads now gaining access to other areas. I mean,
they think that might have been a factor.
I mean, you know, I'm into the dead mall thing. You know,
seriously,
online.
We love the dead mall channels.
We love the dead mall thing.
There's a bunch of good ones, but yeah.
And that's one of the things. Well, that's one of the things that one of the guys that's big into it. And it wasn't Dan Bell. It was one of the other guys. He said that later on, malls started to make new rules to where they did not want public transportation connected to the mall. They wanted only private.
Yeah, because they're like, if you're too poor to afford a car, we don't want your ass in there.
Yeah, because you won't be shopping. And and if you're in there, you might be intimidating the paving customers they'll start leaving. So you would think that, you know, like, they would want as many people,
but not necessarily.
No, that's not what they want. And if you look at some of the richest surviving malls that all have Cartier and Gucci.
Like
and that one
in Miami.
Like that one in Miami. It's exactly what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
You'd be lucky to find that. That thing's hidden, basically.
Well, yeah. They're
because
not
you,
where
you
they,
better know where that
they
is.
They tell the hoi polloi
Yeah, exactly.
They don't want my broke ass in there.
You can find it, but I guarantee you, if you walked in there wearing the wrong kind of clothes and speaking the wrong dialect of English, it wouldn't be long before they asked you at your ass.
Oh,
to
yeah. They would just be
you can't afford anything
time.
In there.
So it's like, what are you doing here?
Yeah, you can't afford anything in there. I mean, that mall was designed for you to go in there and spend $5,000 a visit minimum. And that's, you know, they're selling $70,000 watches in there. You know, normal people aren't supposed to be in there.
I can't imagine spending $70,000 on a watch. I just can't.
Oh, yeah. And they're mostly foreigners.
I just can't. Yeah. Like, why? A $10 Timex will tell you the time the same way.
Well, you don't even need a watch. You can look on your phone.
That's what I mean. You don't even need a watch anymore.
It's status symbols. It's jewelry.
And I don't really, I don't know. Maybe rich people.
Well, you look at it this way.
That.
The people that buy that kind of crap, the people that are buying that kind of crap, the $70,000 is just nothing to them. If that was expensive to them,
obviously.
They wouldn't even buy it.
But here's the thing. I don't know, because I've never been rich. I've always been like broke ass. But even if I had $70,000, even if I didn't even notice that $70,000 was gone, why on earth would you spend it on a watch?
I don't know, man. I don't think, well,
like, why? You don't need
that. I guess it gets to a point.
It's like, I'd rather go on a vacation or something.
I guess it gets to the point to where you're just so jaded and you're just so spoiled that, and you have so much money that
they're just like, yeah, I like
that. There's no difference between $70,000 and $70. So, yeah, it's just zeros.
Yeah.
You know?
I guess.
Something like that.
Crazy. I'll never understand that.
I'd like to understand that.
Well, that's exactly what I was going
to
say. I would like to understand that, though.
That.
Someone would like to give me $1 million.
Maybe one day.
So I can experiment with how I'm going to feel.
How am I
going to
feel about that? Right.
Whether I would spend $70,000 or not. I kind of feel like I wouldn't. I'm too old to change my ways now.
Yeah, I would.
And and I've been poor, you know, pretty much.
I just look at that kind of stuff and I'm going, who am I going to impress with that? Yeah, people would think I was an idiot if I bought that.
That's what I mean. People would be like, look at that douche.
Like, you know, $70,000 watch. Get the hell out of here.
Why?
You douchebag.
Yeah,
it's just like some of these really exotic cars, you know what I mean? I could drive one of those exotic cars. I could work on one of those. I would know all the specs on those cars. The guys that pull up in that in Lamborghinis and Maseratis don't even know what they're driving, can't drive. Those dudes couldn't even get laid.
Well, yeah. Well, yeah. Clearly they can't.
I mean, they show up, it's just like a douche alert.
Yeah.
I mean, we see them around here. They're either some kind of a foreigner that doesn't, you know, that you don't want to know, you know what I mean? He's from Saudi Arabia and he's only going to be here for a week and he treats you as like a peasant. Or he's some kind of drug dealer or he's just some really old guy. You know what I mean? It's not.
I don't get
it. Just like the Corvette. I love Corvettes, but I'm too young for a Corvette. You have to be like 70 or 60 to own one of those new Corvettes. It's like an old man car. It doesn't make any sense.
You can put the every top down and let your gray hair.
Yeah, every time I see one of those things, it's an old man in there. And I'm like, man, I'm not 50 yet. I can't. I'm not even 50. I'm too young
you
for
must
that
be
car.
This old.
You
got to
be at least
ride.
65 right. to buy a fucking Corvette. You know, the day of the 25-year-old Corvette owner, that was 1972, I guess. You know, that's gone.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah.
All right. So, we kind of got off topic, but that's all right. Like well, anyway. So, hope you enjoyed this latest true crime installment. Remember, if you like the show, to like, share, subscribe, and share with all your friends. Tell everybody about our show if you think they would dig it. Also, if you'd like to financially support the show, you can go to our Patreon page, which is patreon.com/13o'clock, or go to our blog, which is 13o'clockpodcast.wordpress.com, and there's a link in the sidebar to a PayPal account. If you would like to give a one-time donation, you can do that too, if you would like. Be sure to check out our Zazzle store at zazzle.com/13o'clock. I just added 4 brand new t-shirt designs. Also, check out our latest movie review, which was the Daniel Craig James Bond movies, the last 4 of them, which was a fun review to do. And that will do it for episode 97. We'll see you next time. Bye.
If you're walking home late at night through unlit streets, mosquito bites aren't the worst thing that you may feel. You may have a heart of gold and nerves of steel. They just won't mean a thing if you don't mind your